Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now on with Monkey Tennis.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi everyone, Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just a quick one before we get on with part two of our Alpha Papa Live special. I know how annoying it is when you've listened to part one, you skip over to part two, and then you have to sit through a whole long intro. So if you haven't already listened to part one, please go and listen to it first, because there may very, very well be some jokes in the second half that don't make any sense unless you've heard the first half. That's pretty much all I had to say. Hope you're enjoying it, and I'll see you again at the end.
Thank you very much.
Well done, everybody. That was pretty good.
Really good.
Yeah.
Monkey tennis? Just like that. Monkey tennis?
People around the world ask, who is Alan Partridge?
Monkey tennis?
I am C. Trace.
Chronic thuggery?
Monkey tennis?
Jason Argonaut.
Monkey tennis?
Our friend Michael just sent a text saying he hasn't bought toilet paper in 18 months.
Cheers.
Monkey tennis.
Hello everybody, and welcome to the second half, or if you're listening at home, part two of the Monkey Tennis Live Alpha Papa special, recorded live at the Prince Charles Cinema in Leicester Square, London, where our audience will now make a short amount of noise.
Good noises.
So
like,
we're going to talk a little bit about some general facts to do with the film before we get back into the plot. But before any of that, two things. One, firstly, a shout out to the guy who let us know that as he was leaving, he heard someone say to their partner, "You did do a shit in a box."
We don't know who that was, but yeah, we know you're here.
We've got our eye on all of you now. And also, there's something's been the subject of some debate since we started doing Monkey Tennis. We've had quite a lot of people get in touch with us, especially on Twitter, to say that one of us sounds like Will from The Inbetweeners. But we've been unable to determine who it is. So what I thought we would do is, if we'd all stand up for a second, each of us in turn is going to say, "Hello, my name is etc." And I sound nothing like Will from The Inbetweeners. When we're all done, we're then going to see which
you can
one
cast
of us
your vote.
You think it is. So my name's Adam, and I sound nothing like Will from The Inbetweeners.
My name's Tom. I sound nothing like Will from The Inbetweeners. do we need to do the rest?
I mean,
no. Okay, fine.
I feel like we found our winner.
Yeah. Well, that was you're brilliant. All happy now, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah. Good. See, we told you it was you. She wouldn't listen. All right.
I think somebody did tweet us that as well. Anyway.
Okay, so some wanker. General facts about Alpha Papa. Obviously, the initial teaser that went out, there were a number of alternative titles suggested. The Norfolk Fracture, Gunbird, Hectic Danger Day, Chap of Steel, and my favourite, Colossal Velocity.
It's nice to say that, isn't it?
Colossal Velocity. I would say at least half of those are better than Alpha Papa.
Absolutely. Yeah. I like Hectic Danger Day. That's good.
I take Hectic Danger Day, The Norfolk Fracture, Chap of Steel is a bit too Superman, isn't it?
Yeah.
Colossal Velocity.
Yeah.
I mean, I can see why they didn't go with that. It's quite hard.
I like Chap of Steel, but it's the way he delivers it. He goes, Chap of Steel.
I feel like Alpha Papa kind of could be a Bond film title, couldn't it?
Yeah. Alpha Papa, Quantum of Papa. never say Alan again.
Yeah.
But just to recap on something you said earlier, the film is just called Alan Partridge in America, right?
Yeah, because...
too difficult for American audiences to understand Alpha Papa, the Alan Partridge movie.
They did make some changes for American audiences, but they also talk a lot on the commentary about how they could have done more, but they didn't. So, for example, Pat sacked, not fired, and things like that. So I think they've done a pretty good job of not pandering to an American audience and keeping it Alan, true to Alan.
Yeah, because I guess they probably tried to keep it kind of self-contained as well, so it's not all referencing things that have happened in the sitcom and
stuff
like that.
Yeah, and they said they didn't want to do like Alan goes on holiday or like, you know, Alan in space.
In fact, I did go back and listen to some interviews that Armando Iannucci did around the time of promoting the film. And yeah, he said, speaking to Simon Mayo, we didn't want to make the film Alan Goes to America or Alan Goes to Ibiza. So it is trying to keep it grounded in the world that Alan would normally inhabit.
Again, would 100% watch both of those films.
Yeah, I know. Sounds great to me. Yeah.
Do we know how the film did in America, like box office wise?
No, I've only got...
The short answer is no.
Let's move on from
But that. We do know how it did in the UK box office. Who wants to go into that?
Yeah, let's talk about that instead.
Okay, because we've got that information.
Have we?
Yeah.
Went to number one.
Yeah.
Took 6.2 million at the box office off a budget of 4 million, so
very
a success.
Profitable. Yep. Profitable.
Yeah.
Yep. I've got a much more important fact than that, though. As discussed, three of the four of us went to the premiere. Who was it that didn't go to the premiere? Was it?
It was just down the road.
Oh, it was Tom, wasn't it?
Where was mine?
We did have a spare ticket.
You dossers and dwads.
Anyway, the fact is, 800 chocolate oranges with superficial damage were used at the premiere.
Yeah,
we've got three.
Yeah, we're on a slightly lower budget. It got 87% on Rotten Tomatoes. It was 7 out of 10 on IMDb, is that right?
That is correct, from 24,618 votes at time of checking.
The lowest rated Partridge Associated production. Do you think it's the worst Partridge output? I don't know about that.
Really?
I think that's fair.
I think it probably is.
It doesn't mean it's bad, but it's a very high standard with the other sitcoms.
What do you think is potentially lower than this, then, Adam?
I don't know. I just find it hard to believe that...
he's got nothing.
He hasn't got an answer.
I mean, I guess if you're not counting things like the day-to-day... Well, no, the day-to-day was really good.
I think that's better. Yeah,
it's very
better.
Hard to compare, isn't it? Because Partridge is it crosses many mediums.
And this is the worst part.
This is very diplomatic here, Adam.
So, any other general facts about the film?
Well, I just thought that... Is there an argument that this film did pretty well? Because... There was quite a huge gap of no Alan from the end of I'm Alan Partridge to Mid-Morning Matters. And then literally you had Mid-Morning Matters and then the film pretty much straight after one another. Mm. So Mid-Morning Matters basically I think, did almost the marketing job for this film of bringing Alan back into the public conscious.
Because Mid-Morning Matters launched on YouTube, didn't it?
It was a Foster's thing.
Not Foster's Menswear.
Beat me to it.
In fact, Tom, didn't somebody send you a message about Foster's Menswear earlier?
My mum.
So... It just proves I'm not making it up.
She just commented on Facebook saying, Foster's Menswear and a Ben Sherman shirt.
Oh, nice.
Hi, Mum, if you're listening.
Yep. She's not here, is she?
No,
she's not here.
We're on a scene I like to call Alan on a Rope. he's coming out of the radio station. He's talking to the people outside. There's a lot of placards on the go. He's on a rope, presumably so Pat Farrell doesn't let him wander too far. But I don't quite understand that. How does the rope system work? Can you just pull it over his head? Untie it?
I think it's tied quite tight. So I don't know, maybe...
But isn't the point that Pat's like ensconced within the radio station so that he still has connection with Alan, but Alan... Isn't it some kind of...
I guess if he feels like Alan is trying to untie it or make a break for it, he can just yank him back in or tug him off or whatever.
You're better than that.
Yeah. And I do love the start of this scene. He has to identify himself as well, and he's very visibly annoyed about that.
And he's on the news at this point, so you could argue that this is the point where he is actually finally famous. Yeah. Probably more people watching watching the news bulletin than have ever watched or listened to any of his output.
Well, that's kind of like the overriding thing here, that basically Alan is able to use the siege as an opportunity to promote himself and... improve his profile in the local Norfolk area. And that's kind of what he's doing here, isn't it?
Yeah, and yeah. He slips into entertainer mode as well. You know, he's noticeably walking around like he's doing a stand-up routine. There's even a routine about his ex-wife. He starts making jokes. The identify yourself gag, all of that. Like it's like performing for him.
He's essentially being Michael McIntyre, isn't he?
Yeah, basically.
That's basically what he's doing. It's even like the way he's walking and everything.
Yeah.
I had a note here that his voice actually just sounds quite straightforward Mancunian. It sounds a bit more Coogan than Partridge. I thought it's almost like it could almost be Paul Carf or something like that.
Yeah,
if you go back and watch some kind of old Alan, whether it's him on Day to Day or whether it's I'm Alan Partridge, there's been a gradual progression of him sounding more normal and more like Steve Coogan, which I think is quite interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think Armando Iannucci did say about that, like he basically defended it, saying our voice boxes change over decades. But is that really true?
You're not suggesting that Coogan's phoning it in at this point, are you?
I've not said that. Why have you said that? Always the same jokes. Do you want to go? Would you like me to list what's written on the placards outside the station? I've made a note of all of them here.
Yeah, go on.
So you've got Happy 40th, Lucy.
Relevant.
You've got two signs that have Shape the Way We Don't Want It to Be.
Very clever.
Psycho Pat. Attica, which we'll talk about in a minute. No Surrender, and Have My Baby Danny S, and baby is spelt B-A-B-I-E. So that tells you very much where his fan base is coming from.
I also noticed that there's another placard, perhaps it's slightly later on, that is an advert for low-cost loans.
I think
taking
I didn't
advantage
spot
of
that,
that
in
TV coverage.
Go on, carry on.
Alan then insists that the police negotiate via him, but then when they tell him what they want to say to Pat, he overcomplicates the sentence so much Pat can't understand it anyway, so he's the worst middleman around. He's got a lot of fans outside, and if you look closely, one of them is Diane Morgan, who is better known as Philomena Kunk.
Where?
Ah, yeah.
Kunk on Partridge.
Kunk on Partridge.
Would watch.
And he basically starts his comedy routine once he realises that his heckler is attractive. As soon as he spots her, suddenly it's funny times for Alan.
But also, you say that his fans are out in force, but where have these fans come from? He doesn't really have that many fans, does he? I think it's just people that stumble across his station.
So someone shouts, aha, and someone shouts, love you. So
he's got at least two fans.
Yeah, and he was recognised earlier, so...
Three.
Yeah.
That's a marked improvement from the I'm Alan Partridge days.
Which was one. He's Thomas.
Maxwell, not the producer.
So he gets pulled back by Pat at that point, doesn't he?
Tugged off.
Yep. And then they're in the studio, and he's finally discovering the beauty of YouTube videos.
This is where he asks if you've ever met a genuinely intelligent bus driver, which...
Great line.
Yeah.
Which I think's unfair. Coach, maybe. But bus, I think, is unfair.
Just to go back to the Attica sign, because it's quite an interesting, subtle reference for another film, Dog Day Afternoon, which starred Al Pacino. He plays a character, Sonny, who holds 8 bank employees hostage, and he starts to chant Attica, Attica, which is a reference to an Attica prison riot of 1971. So I just thought it's quite an odd choice.
The IMDb trivia page is brilliant.
Yeah, it really is. Really is very
really
useful.
It really is a useful resource.
But I just thought it's very weird for them to reference something like that in this film, because it's quite a serious film, and it's quite a cinematic reference.
Well, they talk about it a lot in the commentary, don't they? That it was an inspiration, and they basically kind of lift it.
They reference it.
Yeah, they reference it. They reference it a lot. Yeah,
they've ripped it off.
How have you not seen it?
Because I haven't seen it.
Oh,
I mean, his logic is sound. Whatever you think,
you can't argue with that. So, yeah, go on, Adam. Do you want?
I'm just wondering, are we showing this thing here?
Well, yes. Yeah, so, after this,
some of you know where this is going.
For the benefit of podcast listeners, rather than people in the audience, we've just put up the beginning image of the cinematic epic Fat Woman Falls Down Hole, which is referenced in Alpha Power.
So what happens in this scene is what gets Alan on the news. So then the BBC news broadcaster says in the film has had more YouTube views since one of the most viewed YouTube videos since Fat Woman Falls Down Hole, which is actually interesting. If you look, the video of Alan on YouTube has only had 323,000 views. So you think that's not actually that many?
No.
They haven't really... They could have just made it look like it's
had
millions.
How many billions has this one had?
I don't know, but should we watch it, in case anyone hasn't seen it? It's a Fat Woman Falls Down Hole.
It's important that we watch it.
She's, there you go. She's going to go any second now.
So we're in a
puddle. She's not looking.
She goes.
There it is.
That is unfortunate.
So also, when you have the debate, the YouTube screen grab where they're talking about this on the news.
Oh, it's playing again.
It's on a loop.
We're on a Fat Woman Falls Down Hole loop. Yeah, so when you've got the kind of montage of the news coverage and they have the screen of Alan's YouTube when he's on the rope, the other videos listed alongside it, you know, where it's like the "you might also be interested in this." The other videos are AP gets angry on Mid-Morning Matters, AP on Kings and Cars, AP on his Twitter account, AP opens bookshop, AP getting it wrong, and AP tax office freak out. And I have checked, they're all real YouTube videos.
Amazing.
As well.
Yeah. I didn't know that at all.
Good bit of research.
I've done my research.
Well done.
Yeah.
Watch the film as well. And then you've got the radio phone-in compilation after this, which I thought is basically like an advert for DAB radios. I thought it was quite ridiculous.
Then we're back towards the studios where he's proclaiming Neil Diamond will always be King of the Jews. I noticed that Pat and Alan, by this point, already have their own joint jingle, so they've moved fast. And they play off each other very well. I think Psychic Simon's right to be threatened, not just because he's got a gun to his head, but also because Pat and Alan are not a bad pairing.
Yeah, good bit of camaraderie between them. I can't see Clifton ever being able to do this.
No, too booze, that's why.
He also asks, what used to be better in the olden days? Callers suggest Egypt. Racist. nurses. I think this is Alan's description of nurses. Isn't it? And now just short-haired women in trousers washing their own hands in a sink. Frighteningly specific. Somebody else suggests UK manufacturing, which he dubs good but boring. And then someone calls him the classic, kill them all, Pat, and shoot the women first.
Cut them off immediately.
Then there's the genuinely clever bus driver as well. And the fact of the day, sponsored by Norfolk Dairies, cows don't have hymens. And I thought, do you think, given the sponsorship, does every fact contractually have to be dairy-based?
Quite possibly. That wouldn't surprise me.
It sounds like they probably had a lot of better facts before they resorted to cows don't have hymens.
That's in like week 12 of the sponsorship. Yeah. They're scraping the barrel, yeah.
Lynn's on the scene around this point saying, Alan doesn't like me talking to the press. Yes, Lynn, it's because you're an absolute publicity hound.
Lynn has not been media trained.
Seriously,
no, that's obvious.
In another life, she'd be the sort of person calling heat to spot herself and turn up to the opening of a bag of crisps. Alan tries to get Angela to spot him on TV back in the studio because he's starting to be reported on. But by the time she looks, it's Kim Jong-un. he then desperately tries to find a channel that he is on. I counted how many times he had to change the channel before he eventually found himself. It's 38 times.
Oh, I wanted to guess.
All the channels. Is it in this scene as well? Angela says to him, he's all hectic, which I thought was a nice tie-in with a hectic danger day as well. Yep. And he says, yeah, he's puffed up like a robin. And I'd noted later in the film, he says he's puffed up like an owl. So he's very very inconsistent. Yeah.
Very puffed.
And also not throwing a partridge into the options either.
No, the bird he inhabits is getting bigger as you go on.
Yep.
There's a bit of a continuity error, I think. He's giving Angela a tour of the disabled loo, but we've established that she's already used it.
Good. Having a tour of a disabled toilet as well.
Some of them are very spacious, Nick.
I think he's looking for an excuse to...
Get
yes,
amorous.
He agrees. Ah, yeah. There we go.
Agreement within the audience. Yeah.
Someone's done that trick
Alan's
before as well.
This is my notes just say, Alan's getting amorous and even his nasal whistle can't stop it.
Nasal wheeze.
Angela plugs it, I noticed, before diving in for snogs. So I was very considerate of her.
Diving in.
and Alan also insists on a little moan between every kiss.
It's horrible. Oh,
I can say
so
sitting
disgusting.
Next to Adam doing that is not pleasant.
You think that's bad?
Oh,
God. I'm about to use the line he uses to identify his penis. That is my damn todger.
I'm out.
Oh, Alan.
Oh. Well... We can't see his damn todger, but we assume it's there.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
We'll come to that in a minute.
So, the disabled loo.
There's quite a few callbacks to I'm Alan Partridge in this scene.
Yeah, there are, yeah.
Yeah, he's talking about Jason Tresswell, sorry. Saying he likes me and he really likes me, just like he did about Chris Feather at the end of Series 1.
Hang on, is it Tresswell or Cresswell?
I'm not sure.
I've got Cresswell in my notes.
It's Tresswell.
I haven't got any notes, to be honest.
He hasn't seen it.
The reason I know this is because I saw it in your notes and I was like, that's wrong. Double checked it. It's Tresswell.
It's Tresswell.
Good
Thanks,
to know.
IMDb. Lynn's example of Alan's bravery is that he hit a duck rather than run away when it pecked him. not even a swan.
Go anywhere near a swan, it'll break your arm.
Her role on the BBC News is listed as executive assistant to Alan Partridge. Is that the title Alan gave her or has she embellished?
She's embellished.
Yep.
Yeah, executive. Be real.
She's on 10 grand a year and no more.
He attempts to be a lad in front of Jason, but it's not for him. He starts talking about how when he comes back from the toilet, I gave her a ruddy big kiss, she won't forget in a hurry. But within seconds, it's a story about how he never really knew his mother and
he's crumbled.
And he also says, "I'm joking, Lynn, enjoy me," which is a bit of a callback to "I'm being bawdy, Lynn, enjoy me" from "Enjoy It" from "I'm Alan Partridge." Lots of callbacks to classic Alan and Lynn moments. And at this point, he thinks Gordale Media think he's some sort of Christ 2.0.
the next thing I've got on my notes is, as we can see here, that his trousers and his boxers come off. Why would, like, if you'd watch the scene back, why would his trousers and boxers both get hooked on it?
Well,
it's
ridiculous. I do think this scene is funny, but it's not very Alan, this humour.
Yeah,
it's a little bit slapstick, isn't it?
I don't know why they would have put...
It's easy. It's an easy laugh,
isn't it? Yeah, it is, isn't it? Maybe they were panicking about the fact there weren't many laughs in the film.
I mean, that did get a laugh, so yeah.
The funny bit is when the paparazzi turn up and start...
Yeah, the exasperated look on his face after taking a photo behind him was brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah.
The guy who plays the paparazzi guy was in a band with Steve's brother and is also the voice of most of the callers to Mid Morning Matters. Fact punch for you there. One question: does Alan's bum look old enough? I know you can't quite see it here. I don't think it passes for 55 in the film. I think it's a younger bum.
It's a stunt bum.
It is a stunt bum.
Oh. It's relatively flat, though.
What?
Flat?
Well, yeah, it doesn't have much shape.
If you've just started
the way you want it to be.
Yeah. I'll set them up, you knock them down.
If you skip to this point in the podcast, this is Review Alan's Anus with Nicole. A policeman accosts the semi-nude Partridge, but surely by now he knows who he is and that he's helping them. That's a bit weird.
Although, I guess, again, it's about that thing about Alan having to always reintroduce himself and being annoyed about that, so maybe people don't know who he is.
There is that. I had a question here that gets answered later in the film, actually. They took the pictures from behind. His willy is tugged between his legs, as we can see on the screen behind us here. Do we think that the paparazzi got it in the photo? The answer is, later on, yes, they did.
Yes, because it's pixelated, isn't it, on the news coverage?
Yeah, and I think described quite graphically.
Oh, that's right. Yes, it is.
I'm surprised, given Coogan's sort of well-known dislike of tabloid culture, they didn't make more of the paparazzi being a scumbag in this scene. He got off quite lightly.
Well, that is pretty bad, isn't it? Yeah. What more did you want?
Yeah, okay. I don't know. Some sort of lambasting. I don't know. I thought it was a good opportunity to make a point, but it was not made.
Yeah, he is very much anti the old tabloid
red tops.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep. Should we move on to the next scene?
Yes. What, the house?
The house where... I think what's been irking me about this, we don't know whose house this is. Is it Alan's? I don't think it's Lynn's.
He is furious.
We don't know.
I don't think Lynn would have a wall-mounted telly. That's the only clue I've got to go on.
Well, I think that we do see Lynn in the film, and it's definitely not this house.
Again,
this isn't Alan's house that we see at the beginning of the film either.
No.
Maybe he's got a flat in town.
There is a classic...
Couldn't it be back at Alan's house?
Possibly.
I think it's back at Alan's house.
We may never know. Mm. There's a classic visual gag where he's motioning to the screen behind him saying, my ass, your face, but they alternate.
Yep.
So when he says my face, it's an ass. When he says your face, it's the other one.
I was saying down there, did he do that the right way around? I'm not sure.
I don't know. He wasn't sure.
He bottled it towards the end.
My arse, your face.
I think he got away with it.
He then gets quite heated with Lynn and starts saying, I was Gordale's golden goose and now I'm just partridge pie with peas. My question is, why is the addition of peas so bad?
And he wasn't as well.
Yeah, exactly.
He really wasn't.
Yeah.
He had the limelight for a very brief moment.
The cracks are starting to appear here, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. This is full Lynn-Alan confrontation mode. She says, Gordale are bullies. And he says, yes, and what do you do with bullies? You make friends with the bullies so they bully someone else.
Good advice.
Lynn, as she's wont to do, becomes very Bible quotey at this point and gets corrected by Alan, does and doth. She's definitely closer to a level pegging with him now. She never would have given him.
I was going to say, this is confidence we've not seen before.
It's a real confrontation.
Well, she's had her moment as well. Maybe she's puffed up like a whatever.
A little bit, but I
puffed
think
up like a mouse.
I think if they're both puffed up, he's puffed up beyond all safety, and she's just puffed up to the level of a regular human. So I think at this point,
it's quite a good point.
Yeah, I'm like, come on, Lynn. He's like, who the heck do you think you are? She says, I'm Lynn Benfield, and I was like, yes, Lynn, get him,
get in, Lynn.
He then insults her, saying a lot of people think your hair looks like a photograph of an explosion. Extra funny.
That's one of my favourite lines.
He's come straight from the siege and not spoken to anyone, so how would he possibly know? And then he goes too far. I don't think I want to employ someone who looks like a madam, and I don't mean a Parisian one. I mean one who lives in a terraced house behind a train station.
Alan, you've blown it.
Gone too far.
Yeah. And you can tell that he knows he's gone too far because there's some great face acting from Coogan, and then there's a little nasal whistle.
The nasal wheeze kicks in.
Yeah. Is this the first time he's driven her to quit, do we think?
Yes. Well, that we know
very
of.
Confident there, Tom. Yes.
Well, that we know of, obviously. But
yeah.
I think it's probably the first time she's driven her
I
to
think
quit.
It is, yeah.
But it's also probably the first time she's had the confidence to quit.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're right. I think it's the confidence that she, the newfound confidence.
Yeah, I think if any of us were Alan's assistant, we would have quit many times before. But yeah, it's taken her this long. So
back to the siege.
Yes. Well, just one thing. Just at this point, I feel like the stakes in this scene are higher than anything else. At this point, I'm kind of like, I don't care if all the hostages are killed, as long as Alan and Lynn can be friends again.
Correct.
That's the price I would pay.
And Michael is safe and well.
And Michael's safe and well, yeah.
And can poo in an actual toilet.
Yeah.
But that can be his choice. Yeah. Yeah.
So we're back at the siege. There's a pizza delivery guy who turns out to be a policeman undercover. Alan almost blows that. Alan's being a bit of a shit here. He soon loses interest in Angela when he finds out she's got kids.
Yeah, he's not best pleased when he finds out about that, is he?
No, and yeah, he gives away the pizza policeman. Psychic Simon says to Alan, it looks like you had a turkey's head behind your legs. That's what I was talking about. Obviously, the penis made it into the paparazzi shot.
Yes. Yeah.
And then Pat's warming to Simon. He says he's hilarious, and Alan corrects him. He's solid. having seen plenty of psychic Simon, is he hilarious or is he solid?
I think he could be hilarious, but Alan's always stopping him. He's always kind of raising the finger and making him stop the gag.
He never reaches his true potential.
But exactly.
When you let him off the leash, he comes up with things like Jizlam. So, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, that wasn't his finest hour, was it?
He's got potential, I think. He's got potential.
The policeman's undercover as a Pizza Go-Go delivery man, which was so heavily branded, I thought surely it's product placement. Have they taken the sweet Pizza Go-Go dollars?
I think so.
I would.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And yeah, Alan's now ruining the police plan for his own fame. And when Angela gets the opportunity to leave, he insists that she stays. Not you. Very cruel. Which I think is almost worse than the station manager leaving at the start. But then, of course, he lets her go when he finds out she's got kids, so that's okay. Angela offers Alan a homemade pizza, but the kids were a deal breaker, and so he's
not interested.
He's not having it. And then there's a point where they're talking to Simon about his head gun situation. He says, I was worried about the old head, but I think I've got a handle on it. And I thought, how long has he been saving that joke up?
Yeah.
Hours, probably.
Again, potential, but he's not hilarious.
Needs a bit of guidance, perhaps.
Yeah. He's solid, isn't he? Yeah. Alan has a bit of an internal dilemma while Jason's giving his speech. I guess the question to the group really is, at what point does Alan break alliance with Jason? And
I think this is it. I think him slagging off Lynn is the final straw for
the
Alan.
The point where Jason calls Lynn Mrs. fucking Doubtfire.
Yep.
Oh,
he's that guy. That guy,
he's too far.
That guy can get to fuck. Yeah. Not with our Lynn. No way.
No one talks about our Lynn that way.
I was going to say, I feel like Alan in his head is probably thinking, I can say that. But you cannot.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right.
And also, he probably knows he's massively mucked up earlier, so he's like, this is the opportunity
to win it back.
Yeah.
Turn
the station's one thing, but nobody fucks with Lynn, so he gets Danny to taser Jason.
Yes.
Danny's operating purely in 100% self-interest. He only does it because he found out he was potentially going to lose his show. Yep.
Because Danny is a shit, as discussed.
And then the police move in. They're all shouting proper police orders. And then Psychic Simon in the middle of it just screaming, have you got any scissors?
Yeah, that's brilliant.
There was due to be a bit here where Dave Clifton has brandy and whiskey hidden behind the microwave, but they thought it was a bit too cynical about a recovering alcoholic, so they cut it out. They want Dave's story to be one of redemption.
So that was too far for a character they've had discussing heroin, cocaine and hookers.
Yeah. And
that was too much.
They draw the line at espionage brandy. Yeah. So I think at this point we are in the roadshow van.
What's happening? Yep.
Here we go. There it is.
What's the conversation to get them into the van?
Yeah, it just kind of happens, doesn't it?
That's what I don't understand. Like,
isn't there a discussion earlier when they're looking at the old photos when they say, "Oh, that's still down in storage" or something like that? I think there is a line where that it's alluded to that the roadshow van still exists. I haven't watched the film, so I've got no idea. I'm making it up.
There we go.
They also had that van parked outside at the premiere, which you would know if you were any of us except Comstar.
No idea. Not,
yeah, I mean, I was there. Nick, you were there.
I was there. I was there.
It was great.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Yeah.
It was a regional premiere as well. Did you go to the one in...
No.
No. I mean, 800 chocolate oranges they had.
I wouldn't say it was the best night of my life, but top five.
Up there. Definitely up there. Yeah.
There was a plot line that was going to be included about Gordel Media doing some serious corporate wrongdoing, and Lynn was going to discover this by reading an email that she wasn't supposed to see, but they cut all of that. But
thank God.
It sounds boring. Yeah. But there was a split second where, if you look at the sign in the window of the Radio Norwich van, it says whistleblowers, which is obviously to do with that plot line, but they didn't edit it out properly.
Also, Michael is driving the van, and I'm confident in terms of his tax insurance, and he's not wearing a seatbelt.
Yep, he points out all those things.
Yep.
What are you going to do about it this time? Which indicates he's definitely done this before. Yeah. He's been troubled with the law many times.
Absolutely.
Yep. Also, quick fact, which I'm sure a lot of people are aware of, but Simon Greenall, that plays Michael, is also the voice of Alexander the Meerkat from Compare the Meerkats. Yeah, true facts.
Nice.
There you go. That got a whoop. I think that was undeserved. Yeah. Thank you. Very generous of you. Yes.
Question to the group about this sequence. Is this the slowest car chase in the history of film? I think it might be.
Quite possibly, because not only is it very slow, but it's also happening for a long time.
This is real speed. Yeah. That's it. So obviously this is soundtracked by John Farnham, You're the Voice. Do you want a quick fact punch on that?
Mm.
Go ahead.
I thought you were going to say no for a minute.
It nah, reached right.
number 6 in the UK chart in 1986.
So that's you it. Were...
45. Yeah, carry on.
Very good.
Absolute banger as well.
True.
The bit about Michael saying, I've got near tax, near insurance, and I'm not wearing a seatbelt. What are you going to do about it this time? It's another classic allusion to past misdemeanors, like when he said in Alpha Papa, oh, no, I've been told I can't hit customers.
Yeah.
No, or have naked flames on the fork, I've been told.
Yeah. Alan starts pretending that Lynn's Bible quote that she used when they were having their confrontation, what was it? What price is... I can't remember the whole thing, but what price is to a man when he doth lose his soul?
Something like that, yeah.
Bit of jembling there.
Yeah, a bit of jembling. And he starts using that as if and saying he always uses it, which is a bit cheeky. And it's also like he uses the line about Frankenstein and Frankenstein's monster in I'm Alan Partridge to correct Ben, and that's something that he was corrected on back in the Partridge radio years as well. Michael beeping along with the music is the funniest thing I've seen. Maybe not in the whole film, but he's a very funny man. Alan is rumbled, though. Pat's put two and two together. He can tell that the handwriting that Alan's used is the handwriting that he used to write Just Sack Pat. And before you know it, Alan is hiding in a toilet.
Could you get in there that quickly?
No.
No. They've taken liberties there, haven't they?
Yeah. That's creative license.
Actually, I just wanted to skip back quickly, actually, because what we haven't discussed is Alan's large question in this scene, which is... about keeping eggs in the fridge. So, quick poll. Do you keep your eggs in the fridge, yes or no?
I know I shouldn't, but I do.
Mm.
I think so, yeah.
You're not sure? You just get the staff to do that. Yeah, Adam?
Never in the fridge.
I do keep them in the fridge, but yeah, you don't need to, so...
Although, when we discussed breakfasts in a previous podcast, I'm confident Adam said that he didn't like eggs.
I don't like eggs.
Well, this story's changed a minute ago. You're keeping them in the fridge.
Let's move on.
I don't either. You don't like eggs? Or maybe I was thinking of you.
No, I don't like
them.
He hates eggs. Anyway, it's not that important, but that does lead us on to them playing the pairs game as well. In the phone-in, when the caller says egg and bacon, he says, oh no, it's egg and gammon. I did think egg and bacon would be a more common pairing.
Yeah, that's the joke.
Wow.
So I've got a question.
I've not seen the film.
No. I've got a question vis-a-vis the toilet scene, which we have on a screen behind us for the people who are here live.
Very important question.
Was Pat going to poo or wee on Alan? I think this is very important that we have audience participation. So what I would like is on three, if you could either shout poo or wee, then we will never get any more lowbrow than this. And we can all go home worse people than we arrived. Okay. I think we should all shout our answer as well, but maybe a little off the mic.
Yep. One, two, three.
Hey! Well, that was definitive.
The results were inconclusive.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I...
But we all had a lovely time.
Yep. Well, I do remember first watching this because he says, I'm not going to shoot you, Alan. And then he goes to start unbuckling his trousers and you think, oh, he's going to do a pee. And then he turns around. Yeah. You know that poo was the objective.
Yeah, sure.
It does become clear.
So Alan tries to escape out of the loo. Couldn't he just...
I don't know how he releases that, by the way.
No. Well, I was thinking he escapes just in time before Pat takes a shit on him. I mean, I guess the septic tank isn't meant to take 12 stone of feces, and the van is very old, but why would that suddenly be the breaking point that it just takes off?
Well, do you reckon that that is genuinely the storage capacity of one of those wagons?
One Alan Partridge. One Steve Coogan.
I mean, that's going to see you out for weeks, isn't it?
Months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know where I'm going with it, but there was a lot. I just thought that there was quite a lot of storage for an entire man to get in there. A man's worth of...
something to think about.
Yeah.
Something to think
in about. Your own time.
The nasal whine comes back here. I noticed as well that the flap of the toilet moves up and down with his breathing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's weird. That wouldn't happen, would it?
No.
That's comedy. So just for comedy.
Breathing very powerfully.
Yeah. Also, they added the nasal wheeze in post-production.
You got it right that time.
Yep.
That's a good fact.
So Alan has made it out. He attempts to give away the caravan toilet, or the radio van toilet to a passerby, who presumably is not what she was looking for. And then they're on the pier. He's got the peer rifles.
Yes. Yeah.
There's a brilliant gag with the JFK and Susan Boyle where he's aiming for one but shoots the other because damn
not again. Yeah, not again. JFK.
And I quote, "Damn gypsies have messed with the sun." a great joke on the JFK assassination. And also, I did think, I know they're not pandering to Americans in this film, but I wonder if they picked JFK and Susan Boyle because they're both people that...
would know in America, yeah.
People on both sides of the Atlantic. Yeah, you probably recognize. Right, and then he's aiming at Susan to try and shoot Pat, and he just goes, "Trust me, Susan."
I love the footwork from Alan whilst he's running down the pier here. It's amazing. Yeah, there are twists and turns and pirouettes.
Bobbing like a pigeon to check around corners. Yeah,
running down, looking backwards and stuff.
Whereas Lynn's stealth running is appalling. Absolutely terrible.
And he will pick her up on it later. Yep.
Just one little thing. Next to the poster of JFK is an advert for a book called Finding Harmony by Sally Hinder. I looked it up. It is a real book. And the subtitle of that book is The Remarkable Dog That Helped a Family Through the Darkest of Times.
Would read.
Read that in your own time. He's bobbing around corners looking for Pat, and Pat's been sat on the bench the entire time.
Difficult to find.
Yeah. And then there's that four-way exchange between all the old people on the pier, which is brilliant, really well timed as well.
Yeah.
Then he's talking mano a mano with Pat.
Yeah, the mood's quite melancholic at this point.
Yeah, he's scattered Molly's ashes here, buried at sea.
I was going to say, apart from Bin Laden and Megatron, has anyone else been buried at sea that we know of?
I don't know. Any suggestions of anyone that's been buried at sea?
Please, I've just got nothing to follow that.
Vikings burning ships. Yeah. Does that count as being buried at sea?
And Molly, I guess.
So, we move on to...
Sure.
Anyway.
Pat says to Anne, he's like, the circle of life. To which Anne replies, Cirque du Soleil.
Is that a brilliant gag, or just they were running out of time on the writing?
I mean,
does that sound like Cirque du Soleil?
It's as brilliant and funny as it is nonsense, isn't it?
Yeah. Although it's kind of quite true of Alan. Even if it is crap writing, it's kind of true of Alan's character, because... he just doesn't know how to respond to Pax. He doesn't know what to do in the situation. Michael's got a solution for this situation.
Michael has got a solution, which is to create a diversion by jumping over the railings.
Oh, shit!
And disappearing for good.
That is my absolute favourite moment in the film. Yeah. I think they got the biggest laugh when we saw it.
A key question.
A person clapping, I think, for that moment.
At the death of the most beloved character. I mean, is he dead? Is Michael dead?
No. Well, allow me to give you some insight. So, as we discussed earlier, the Nomad book is the most recent addition to the Partridge canon, I guess. So, when you get to chapter 25 in Nomad is called A Man Called Michael. So, the opening of that chapter is Michael, a friend who is dead.
Oh, spoiler!
No!
Spoiler!
Now, however, as Alan continues, he basically refers to this incident and says it was the last time he was seen alive. Even though his remains are yet to wash up, later that year he was declared dead. So actually, I think it's still left open for a return.
We can all
Michael's
hope and
gone
pray
into hiding.
Please come back, Michael.
Yes, and there's some more Nomad stuff I can share in a bit.
Okay. Obviously there's Alan's song, which is relatively self-explanatory, where he's in a last-ditch attempt to sort of save his own skin and defuse the situation is to start singing You Were Always On My Mind, which is absolutely brilliant, but not a huge amount we can add, really. He's interrupted by the police, to which he says, "Shut up, you dick," which is entirely fair, because he's really going for it.
Yeah.
I think we're now really on Alan's side. Pat moves to suicide. Police keep stealing Alan's thunder as he's trying to
defuse
the situation.
Well, we're kind of on both sides as well at this point. Like, we want them both to just...
Shape is very firmly the enemy now.
Yeah,
the villain.
It's come together over a common evil, Shape. And
you like Shape, remember?
Did I?
Yeah, you really did.
It's the way you want it to be. And so we get Alan's quote-unquote death. He's shot. Some brilliant final words between him and Lynn. They blow me to bits, Lynn. There's some blood coming from my mouth, Lynn, which turns out to be spit. She's so familiar with his bodily functions at this point, athlete's foot, et cetera, et cetera. She doesn't mind at all. And then a seagull lands on his feet. There was some resistance to that scene because of the cost of doing it, but it's another great example.
Cost of putting a CGI sea eagle in there.
CGI sea eagle, not cheap. But it's a great example of Alan being distracted by something trivial at all times, like back in the siege when he was Jason's left right-hand man and then had to move, so he was actually on that side of him. He then says, "Was I a good man, Lynn? Was I kind?" And I've just written, "Bollocks, was he?"
The answer is no.
Yeah, but she does seem to think the fact he once donated some defrosted bacon is enough to redeem him.
I remember when you were defrosting the freezer and you gave me all that bacon, says Lynn. So she's happy with that. Yeah. That's fine.
Yeah. She's looking for the positives in an absolute sea of negatives.
And then we obviously we move gently away from Alan before we realise that he's not actually dead, which I think is the best joke of the film. Brilliant.
I think it's Michael jumping off the pier.
Yeah. Okay. He does say to Lynn as well, yours will be the last face I ever see, just before a hot paramedic turns up, who's actually played by Steve Coogan's real-life assistant.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Lynn then uses the situation to get her job back, which I thought was pretty ruthless.
Good for her.
Resourceful.
Yeah. And then when he asks the paramedic if she's courting... When the paramedic mentions about courting, Lynn's like, oh, well, as if she is courting. So I think she's still dating Gordon. Yeah, I reckon.
Mm. Good to know. Good for Lynn.
Or maybe someone's been in touch after seeing her snazzy new look on the news. Possibly.
With the hair that looks like an explosion.
Exactly. So is there anything else on this? The only thing I would say about Michael jumping off the pier is that I listened to Tony Robinson talking to Richard Herring on a recent podcast, recorded just down the road, actually, about how bold Rick was made to get more and more stupid as time went on. I think you could say the same with Michael, couldn't you? He's certainly not getting smarter. He's just jumped off a pier for no reason.
The progression from series one to series two of I'm Alan Partridge, you go, right, okay, that's clearly working. Let's amp it up a million times. Yeah. And he's like probably the best performer in that second series.
Yeah.
And it goes back to the point that I would have liked to have seen more Michael in the film.
Yeah, definitely.
Always more Michael.
Well, it's probably worth mentioning, if you think about it, basically the entire plot of this film is essentially Michael's fault. So going back into Nomad, as Alan describes, Michael deserted his post to help himself to wine and mini sausages.
Yep.
And that's when basically Pat came in with the shotgun.
Is this the shooter in the Death Star at the beginning of Star Wars?
It's basically that. So if you think about it, there's actually, with this whole siege and guns being fired, etc., only one person in this film dies, potentially, and that is Michael. Arguably, that's fine, because it's all his own fault anyway, so it's not really a problem.
Poor Michael.
Well, to quote Alan in Nomad, some people argue that Michael failed at his duties. He's ultimately responsible for the tragedy that led to the death of one person. That one person being Michael.
Himself.
R.I.P.
So we're back at the radio station where Bruno Brooks has replaced Pat Farrell, which makes sense, really. It's about right. I looked into what Bruno Brooks, famous radio DJ of the 80s and 90s, is up to now. In real life, he founded a media company that's claim to fame so far seems to be owning an interactive internet-based radio station and is broadcasting in, and I quote, over 4,000 convenience stores.
wow.
The company's tagline seems to be where brands shake hands with fans.
Wow, that is just another shape slogan, isn't it?
But also, a mind-blowing fact about Bruno Brooks, something I really didn't expect to find when I researched it, is that he is one of the few men in Britain to have ever upgraded to LinkedIn Premium.
Outstanding knowledge.
Genuinely thinks it's worth the money. Yeah. So at this point, the rebrand's been abandoned, it seemed. They're back to the old name. And they're calling Pat in prison. Would this be allowed, I thought? And then I thought, well, it's no different from cereal.
Yeah, so it's probably fine.
It's only fair. And there's a great disconnect between the novelty of the phone and the reality of Pat in prison. Absolutely miserable.
Yeah.
And then that's it,
that's
really, isn't it?
That's it. We're on to the credits.
We hit the credits.
There's a lovely description of what everyone did next.
Yeah, I think we've got Lynn's one here.
That's
first.
The best one.
Lynn acknowledges she developed ideas above her station. And Alan Partridge considers the matter closed, which is very gracious of him.
Resolved to wind her neck in.
And then we've got Michael's one is even sadder. If we can grab that up on the screen.
Jed's fallen asleep.
Oh, no, he's dead. There we go. Michael was never found.
Now, what I noticed about this as well, you see, Michael doesn't have a surname. So at any point, is Michael's surname ever mentioned?
Yeah, we covered it in the podcast.
But I remember.
Oh dear!
No, he goes. I'm Michael and all, I'm Michael.
Yeah, exactly.
As well, but
yeah.
No, it's not.
So just Michael the Geordie for him. Yeah. Nobody knows.
No. Okay. Across the credits, we also find that Alan got his wish. He said earlier in the film that all he's ever wanted is a Range Rover with a speedboat, and he gets both. The speedboat's called Alpha Papa, which is nice. And he's obviously off on holiday with Angela and her kids, who he's sort of attempting to bond with by saying, "If you guys don't dig the sounds, sling us your pod, I'll dock it."
Do we think he sold his story then to the likes of Heat and any other kind of celebrity weeklies that would publish his story? Because otherwise, where's that money coming from to fund all of this?
Something's happened, hasn't it? Yeah, he's been given a better show, or he's done an okay magazine spread or something. And also, calling a speedboat Alpha Papa is pretty awful. I was wondering if anyone has heard any other terrible names for boats. I once saw one moored in Croatia called Princess Diana. It's what she would have wanted. I'm also constantly amused by when you go past caravans on the motorway that say Excalibur or Trident when they're basically plastic boxes.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Brilliant.
They're going nowhere.
It's a plastic box for retirees to piss in. don't call it, like, Neptune. Ridiculous.
Maybe that's why the septic tank is so large.
It's just a thought.
Just a thought.
Maybe they've been caught short.
They do it on purpose.
Yeah. Anyway, I think that more or less brings us to the end of the film. So what we'd like to do is play Cards Against Alanity with some of you in the audience. If four people have picked up the envelopes, if you'd like to come make your way down to the front, please, then we'll get going.
And if you don't want to come down, give it to somebody that does.
Otherwise, we're going to sit here in silence until we all expire.
Whilst you're making your way down, just quickly discuss the two songs that are used in the end credits.
Yep.
So you've got the number one song in number one, All Over Heaven by Sparks, which is from 1979, reached number 14 in the UK charts. Yep. So a bit of a stat punch for you. And then Tom, the other song is By Example. You had a bit of an observation about that, didn't you?
Well, apart from the fact that it's awful, it basically sounds like the Mortal Kombat theme tune. It's terrible.
It's fairground music.
I checked that online and it does sound exactly like it, so we'll drop that into the podcast.
Please don't. It's awful.
We'll do it. You must embrace it, cause if not, you waste it. You're looking for love in all the wrong places. All the wrong places.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, so we have all our contestants. If you'd like to open your envelopes, if you haven't already, inside there are four options. They're all four phrases that are all said by someone in Alpha Papa. What I need you to do, there's also a pen in the envelope. If you could write your name on the submission and then choose from those four, I'll give you the sentence that you have to complete. So pick the best one to complete this sentence, which is also taken from the film. It's just a standard field phone. Should you feel the inclination to communicate with Z authorities? Good thing about these things, they're immune to the problems and glitches you get with blank. So if you could choose the best one, and then what we need you to do is remember which one you've chosen and drop your sheets down to Jed, who is going to take a look and he's going to pick his winner. Give everybody a second.
Be a bit of a
countdown music.
Bit of dead air whilst this happens.
That phrase you're completing again. It's just a standard field phone. Should you feel the inclination to communicate with the authorities? Good thing about these things, they're immune to the problems and glitches you get with blank.
I'm not sure. We've got a winner.
I'm not sure if Gisland.
Why don't you pick that one?
Yeah. That's good.
He's won. Good night.
Okay, I'd like you to pick one and hand it down to producer Jed at the end there. Please do remember which one you've picked. Because we may ask you to.
Our glorious assistant producer, Jed. Whoa, careful.
How is Jed going to signal victory? He'll stand up.
Okay, what we'll do, so when Jed stands up, I've because basically, we'll be honest, Jed forgot to bring the infamous podcast bell. Luckily, we've got a podcast, we've got an app that will provide the sound of a bell. Let's just test that.
Okay,
so when Jed stands up, I'll do
that. Very resourceful.
It's relatively loud. Okay, so what I'm going to do is just go down the line. If everyone can say their name, their favourite Partridge moment, and then I will read out this phrase, and then if you can read out the bit that completes it, that would be great. So, contestant number one, name and favourite Alan Partridge moment.
Nicholas, any of the radio station bits.
And the phrase I'd like you to complete, it's just a standard field phone, should you feel the inclination to communicate with the authorities. Good thing about these things, they're immune to the problems and glitches you get with...
Stop being racist.
Contestant number two, your name and your favourite Alan Partridge moment.
Abby, and I love you, in a way.
It's just a standard field phone. Should you feel the inclination to communicate with the authorities? Good thing about these things, they're immune to the problems and glitches you get with...
Short-haired women in trousers washing their own hands at a sink.
Lovely stuff. Next person, your name and your favourite Alan Partridge moment.
Kate. And I'm not driving a Mini Metro.
Who could blame you?
Great moment.
Yeah. Lynn is driving a Mini Metro in this film. I think we forgot to mention that. She wouldn't let it go. It's just a standard field phone. Should you feel the inclination to communicate with the authorities? Good thing about these things, they're immune to the problems and glitches you get with...
A genuinely clever bus driver.
And the app's not working. That's the winner.
Oh, that's the winner. Okay, the bell's gone off. Hang on, there's another one to go yet. He might have radio gold. Let's do it anyway. Okay. Your name and your favourite Alan Partridge moment, sir?
Anthony and Bono's house.
We all love Bono's house. It's not, you know, it's not Bono's house. Oh my god! I feel like I'm crushing Bono! Dreams. It's just a standard field phone. Should you feel the inclination to communicate with the authorities, good thing about these things, they're immune to the problems and glitches you get with
chronic thuggery.
Very good.
Oh, I like that. I like that. Please,
I'm ringing a bell for that as well.
All of our. Oh, actually, wait a second. We've got prizes for you guys. One second.
Just make some noise for the contestants, everybody. Yay!
What I liked about that bit is that Abby is over there, is my partner, and when she said her bit, which was "I love you" in a way, she looked at me straight in the face.
Thanks, love. So everybody who took part gets a copy of Alpha Papa signed by Felicity Montague, who plays Lynn Benfield, and then our winner also gets the On the Hour box set, which is the first place we ever heard of Alan Partridge, signed by creative director Svengali and hero Chris Morris. Big round of applause for all of our contestants, please. Woo-hoo! You may rejoin your seats.
Thanks, everyone.
I think we have very little to go through now, so thanks so much for joining us. Thanks to everybody at the Prince Charles Cinema. Thanks to producer Jed, woo! Artwork Dave. Who else? the people that voice our pretend ads, Sarah and Bex. And most of all, thanks so much to you guys for coming. We really appreciate it. I hope you had a wonderful evening. We'll be putting this out on Christmas Day and Boxing Day from us. Goodbye. Thank you. And aha!
Thank you!
Bye! Woo!
Monkey tennis? Just like that. Monkey tennis? People around the world ask, who is Alan Partridge? Monkey tennis?
I am Seatress.
Chronic thuggery? Monkey tennis?
Jason Argonaut.
Monkey tennis?
Our friend Michael's just sent a text saying he hasn't bought toilet paper in 18 months.
How does he?
He steals it from the pub. It's a relief.
Monkey tennis?
Yeah.
Hello again, Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Thanks so much for listening to our two-part live Alpha Papa special, recorded in front of a live audience at the Prince Charles Cinema in London on November 24th, 2016. So, where next for Monkey Tennis? Well, the good news is we'll be back again before too long, and the next series is going to be focusing on Alan's exploits in his chat show, Knowing Me, Knowing You. So, if you've enjoyed the chat show and you've got any comments, questions, theories, or facts you'd like to throw towards us, then you can email us. ThePartridgePod@gmail.com. We're on Facebook.com/ThePartridgePod or tweet us. Twitter, we're @ThePartridgePod. Until then, thanks so much again for listening, and please do subscribe if you haven't already to make sure you don't miss out when we return shortly with some Knowing Me, Knowing You fact punches.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.